You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown and preview edition as we get into this 56-31 win over the University of Northern Iowa and look at this weekend's upcoming game against Western Illinois. And joining me, as always, to break down everything in the world of Bison athletics is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things going for you today?
Really well. Just getting closer and closer to moving into the new place and coming off a Bison victory. Definitely looking forward to this weekend. NDSU goes on the road again, this time in Macomb, which is always legendary for the difficulty of access to that town. You have to fly into the Quad Cities and then drive an hour to get to Macomb, and there are limited lodging options. Everybody always talks about just the road trip to Western Illinois and what a wild one it is. So this will be, if maybe not the most challenging team they faced, kind of the most difficult setting potentially this season.
Especially with it being the second road game of the year, coming off a road game against Northern Iowa. You have to go back on the road this weekend. But before we get to that, let's get into the news part of the podcast. Ross, I asked you this in the pre-production meeting about Easton Stick. You look at the yardage totals, may not have been what people thought. I think that when you look at this game overall for Easton, 56 points for this offense, 6 total touchdowns, where would you rank that this Easton Stick performance against what you've seen throughout his entire career?
Just really impressive. I think, you know, the numbers may not bear out as this was some sort of legendary performance or some sort of, you know, Walter Payton Award type of campaign deal. But what he was asked to do was never going to bring a ton of efficiency or a ton of high completion percentage. You know, he was going to be asked to threaten down the field and do it successfully because they were going to tighten up and tighten up and tighten up after getting smashed in the face with NDSU's run game. And that's exactly what happened. And when he was asked to make plays down the field, he did so without turning the football over, and he did so in really devastating fashion with a couple of long throws down the middle to Shepherd, the beauty up the seam to Bruce Anderson, and then got the ball, you know, out of his hands to Christian Watson on a short one. But really, when it was not his turn to just hand the ball off and kind of move on with the play, he was devastating with his feet and with his arm.
Now, injury-wise, I know that the Jalen Wimbush injury played, I think, what you thought was a large part in NDSU's defensive performance, him going out. But what do we know injury-wise just after the Northern Iowa game here?
Well, we know that they don't expect to have Desmond Cain. He got beat up a little bit. And then they probably actually, somewhat surprisingly, because of what leaked out after the game, they probably do expect to have Jalen Wimbush, which is big because they talked about kind of getting stuck in the base defense without being able to sub, you know, at all on D and having to stay in their base 4-3 and really gave up some stuff in the pass game, I think, potentially because of that.
Got it. And now I know that I teased it last week. Something we haven't talked about a whole lot is recruiting time with Ryan Burns. It's been a while since we've had this edition on the podcast, and I felt like Bison Report subscribers are aware of what's going on in recruiting, but if you want to get a glimpse into what we can offer you in the Bison Report, the latest in recruiting would probably be this. Since we last talked about it on the podcast, NDSU has got a running back committed from Florida by the name of Jalen, I think, Bussy is how it goes by. Now, I know that immediately when NDSU got this commitment, Ross tweets out that he talked to somebody within the program who said, I believe it was along the lines of, Ross, he's the fastest player on tape that some on this NDSU staff have watched. And I fully agree with that. You look at his measurables, not the biggest guy in the world, 5'8", 155 pounds, But what he possesses is that ability to turn the corner and get vertical, which you saw it on Bruce Anderson's long 75-yard touchdown catch. The ability to get vertical and matched up against a linebacker in space potentially, that's a big deal. And Jalen possesses all of that. And so NDSU has also brought in another Florida running back on an official visit by the name of Brandon Marshall Jr. For those of you who watch the NFL and have for the last decade, you'll probably think, I wonder if he's related at all to now Seattle Seahawks wide receiver Brandon Marshall. The answer to that is no. Brandon says there's no relation. Just happens to be he's Brandon Marshall Jr. Just happens to be from the state of Florida. But again, you look at the mold of what NDSU and Coach Messingham are trying to do with this offense. They're trying to bring in these smaller running backs to try and provide some speed. Because I know that both times between Bussey and Marshall Jr., I asked them, you know, how does the coaching staff see you fit? And they say, you know, well, they see us as a Ty Brooks kind of a running back who's able to take carries, able to do things in the passing game. It's clear that Messingham with this final running back spot, you know, really wants to make sure that he's got versatility and speed in these running backs. Now, you'll also see in the last week, if you look at the Bison Report Twitter account, that Jacob Brock, an offensive lineman from Wisconsin, picked up his first offer as an offensive lineman. It's clear that NDSU wants to add another offensive lineman to this class. They already have 19 guys. They're very happy with them. You know, I don't know that NDSU is able to hold on to some of these guys like Luke Wirtz, like Luke Dwyer, as thing gets closer to signing day. And I know that NDSU is prepared for that scenario if that's the case. But they're going to do everything in their power, you know, to make sure that they do. And then on the basketball side of things, Ross, we're still kind of waiting and seeing with this 2019 class. You look at NDSU having Noah Christensen already committed, but the question is going to be, do they have more than one spot available? They brought in multiple transfers here over since the last season ended. The question is going to be for Malik Hardin, a kid from the area, to be able to take his NDSU scholarship. I believe it's a you know, like a gray shirt kind of situation where he'd have to walk on for one, and then he'd be on scholarship for four. The question is going to be, is NDSU going to have room? Because if they don't have room, I don't know that they can find a spot for Malik Hardin. But you look at this 2020 recruiting class for Coach Richmond, which I already know that he's been very active on in both North Dakota and in the Twin Cities. You saw that NDSU offered their first 2020 scholarship in the basketball class to Bowden Skunberg from Jamestown, North Dakota. He's now got a Bison offer, a Fighting Hawks offer, someone that's likely going to pick up. I wouldn't be surprised to see a mid-major or high major offer to, just because having two Division I offers already, and he hasn't even played his junior season of basketball, just kind of the way it goes. So in the recruiting world for both Coach Richmond and Coach Kleiman, things are heating up, Ross.
Good information for Bison fans, certainly. Checking out Bison Report, maybe not primarily, but that's a huge part of what we do is a recruiting trail. Right now, we're going to hear from our presenting sponsor.
Dreaming of being faster, stronger, and more confident? Let the professionals at Dynasty Performance Training morph your body into dominating the competition. Their proven workouts will correct your form, hit your goals, reduce injuries, and enhance your life. And the team at Dynasty Performance Training will be with you every step, every lift, and every sprint on your way there. Visit DynastyPerformanceTraining.com and research the experts today for athletes, for adults, for teams, for you.
All right, should we get into South Dakota State?
I think we should get into Northern Iowa instead of South Dakota State.
I'm sorry, I'm still on marker week.
Yeah, it's all right. So when you look at this Northern Iowa game, we talked a little bit about Easton Stick, but I want to give you, you know, a soapbox again. You look at, again, the day that he had, and I know that you talk about in your Upon Film Review piece that this could be his Walter Payton Award game, even though – people want to see these gaudy stats, the 400 yards of passing with 60 attempts. Well, Easton on the day, average completion, 17.4 yards. That's absurd. I mean, this guy is not afraid to make any throw down the field. That he has a lot of confidence in that arm of his.
He sure does. And I think that, like I said, the completion percentage is potentially a victim of just how aggressive they are being, throwing the football down the field. But I think it's a part of a very excellent offensive scheme from Coach Riley through Coach J. Ray to Coach Messingham. These guys know that they want to pound the ball, and when they're done pounding the ball, they want to attack you, and they want to attack you deep. And that, I think, is an excellent recipe for success, especially how aggressive teams are going to have to be jamming the box, because at this point, especially after you watch the Northern Iowa film, this young offensive line is starting to get it, and they're starting to be able to really go downhill, run A-gap power, run dive, run all the things that they are, you know, famous for being able to run, as far as just not even caring what you're lining up on offense or what you're trying to do. They're going to milk clock. They're going to demoralize and frankly, just physically wear down front sevens. And that's why you see, in general, offensive explosions from North Dakota State in the fourth quarter. It's not because all of a sudden, you know, Coach Messingham takes a magic pill and gets better at calling plays. It's because opposing defenses, after going toe-to-toe with North Dakota State for three quarters, are just gassed. They just don't have it anymore.
And when you look at these offensive, you know, these explosive plays on offense, you have to talk about Bruce Anderson and what he's kind of changed his game to be. You look at his day, 24 touches overall for, I believe, somewhere around 250 yards in that long receiving touchdown. When you look at the progress that Bruce Anderson has made in the last year, how surprised are you? And number two, how big is that for this NDSU offense?
I'm not surprised, you know, because Bruce has an excellent position coach in Coach Messingham, and because that is what he needed to accomplish to just frankly become a better player. It doesn't really surprise me at all, you know, that he was able to really get a grip on what needed to get better in his game, and that was vision. That was not pounding into the gap that the play was designed for and trying to run over anybody and everybody in that gap. He's now seeing the field and sometimes running people over, but sometimes at the same time going to where they're not, going to the open lane, whether it's a cutback, whether it's the you know, where the play is designed to go, whether it's sometimes even bouncing it outside. He's got the speed to do that. He's really become a complete back. He has the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield exceptionally, looks almost like a wide receiver. In fact, they use him a little bit in the slot. He's really showing himself to be the complete tailback that is attractive at the next level and is very, very crucial at this level. And that's a guy that affects the game in all phases and is still probably, you know, if they used him there, probably one of the better kick returners in college football. But return skills, receiving skills, running the ball, it doesn't get much better than Bruce Anderson is playing right now.
And when you look at this game overall, I mean, we talk about Easton Stick only throwing the ball 15 times. Well, folks, if you want to see him throw it more, maybe the rushing offense shouldn't go for 344 yards, four scores, and over 7 yards an attempt. But in the passing game, how valuable is having Darius Shepherd? You look at how valuable he is to this passing offense. You made the argument, and I agree with you, that he may be the second most important player on this offense right now.
It's entirely possible, and I don't think it's a hot take just because of, you know, the what might be, you know, if he's unavailable and what the offense through the air might look like if Shep can't go. And he's a guy that's missed time, you know, in the past and been nicked up with a lower body this or an ankle that. And so something to keep an eye on, certainly. I'm not calling him injury prone. I have no reason to believe that he'll miss time this season for this, that, or the other. But he is a guy right now with a huge usage rate and as a guy that Stick is looking to repeatedly. I said something about it in the press conference to Coach Kleiman. I said, you know, there was probably criticism that you guys were a little bit RJ heavy before, and now it could certainly be said that you're a little bit Darius heavy. What do the young guys have to do to step up? And he didn't even answer me. He just said, hey, if they're not going to cover Darius, we're going to throw it to him. And that's where they're at, you know? I mean, they feel very, very comfortable throwing the ball to Shepard, and until they start doubling Shep and opening things up for other guys, he's going to get the football.
Like, following that marker game that you wanted to break down here earlier, you look at the offensive line, and I know that you weren't exactly thrilled with their performance against SDSU, but you look at the way they changed their best and attacked this Panther defense, I think you have to be a little bit more happy with the way the big boys up front performed.
Yeah, they played a lot better. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt about that. They played so much better, I think, against against Northern Iowa than they did against South Dakota State in a number of aspects. I think limiting Ricky Neal on that defensive front to one sack is something that has to be commended. I think being able to run the ball both on the perimeter and downhill has to be commended. They're getting a ton of help from their fullbacks and tight ends. Coach Roll's crew chiefs are really, really playing well. But it starts up front with that offensive line, and it starts with the continued development of Dylan Radins. It starts with the continued, I think, gelling of two guys that played a lot of tackle. Luke Bacon and Colin Connor played a lot of tackle, and they're really sliding in as right guard, left guard. And their chemistry with Tanner Volson is a real thing, and it's something that, you know, needs to be operating at a high level. And I think it is. You know, I think they're getting better and better, but You talk about if you have good enough feet to play tackle, you're going to be a heck of a guard. You still need to learn how to play guard. They're different positions. And so as Connor gets better at that and as Bacon gets better at that, this offensive line is going to continue to improve. And you can see that, I think, just week to week, and especially with how dominant they were against Northern Iowa on Saturday.
Defensively, it was a game of two halves. And you look at, yes, the Wimbush injury, I think, played a part, but what do you think that the big second half adjustments that Coach Entz made? I mean, you look at Northern Iowa putting up 24 in the first half, 7 points in the second half, and zero, most importantly, there in the fourth quarter. What did this defense struggle with that surprised you, and how did they fix it as the game went on?
Well, like I said, you know, when Wimbush went down, they didn't feel super comfortable going to subs, so they played a lot of rundowns, frankly, with Jabril detached from the formation, out covering a slot receiver. So Jabril was not able to really affect the run game at all. And then they got themselves in position where, you know, they're playing 4-3 against 11, sometimes even 10 personnel on the other side. It's very difficult, even if you don't think a ton of these UNI receivers. And I came away more impressed than I thought I was going to be, you know, with Dowry's Fountain gone. But I thought, you know, the defensive back kid was the defensive back convert kid was a good player. I thought McShane was a good player. I thought that Briley Moore, the tight end, was really good and has that kind of tight end wide receiver hybrid type of body that could really be a problem. And it was a problem early with about an 80-yard touchdown to kick things off. But yeah, they're. You know, they're better than I thought in the perimeter. But at the same time, you know, I thought that North Dakota State maybe didn't play very well. And I think that they would admit that fully in the defensive backfield. They maybe weren't, like I said, ready to play base against all those spread formations. But without Wimbush, what are you going to do? And frankly, I think there have been better games from Robbie Grimsley. I think there have been maybe even better games from the corners. But overall, they were able to make adjustments. I think they only gave up a touchdown in the second half. That has to be considered a victory. Not the way, though, that they want to start games. And I think that's really the most important thing, is they have to find a way to not spot South Dakota State and spot Northern Iowa 14 points, because – that's just about what they did. You know, if Jalen Allison doesn't get that interception in the end zone against the Jacks, that's a 14-0 game. And the Northern Iowa game literally started 14-0. And there might be a playoff team, whether it's James Madison, Elon, doesn't matter who it is, there might be a playoff team that you can't afford to spot 14 points.
These slow starts that NDSU keeps having, both offensively and defensively, I mean, I wanted to kind of draw towards, you look at this Northern Iowa game specifically, first road game of the year, maybe the guys weren't ready to go right away, but this is becoming a bit of an issue with these slow starts. So when you look at this Bison team, how do they make sure that doesn't happen for the third straight week against Western?
I don't think the talent level at Western is quite on the same plane. I really would struggle to foresee NDSU struggling on offense early. And defensively, they just need to make some secondary adjustments, because that's exactly how Western is going to try and jam the ball down the field, is definitely with the downfield passing game. McGuire is completely immobile, very similar to the way that Eli Dunn is completely immobile, but they're still forcing the ball downfield with some success. They're scoring with some success. They're not playing a ton of defense, but they're scoring the ball.
So let's look at this Western Illinois team, and you lead off with it with Sean McGuire. I said in the pre-production meeting to you, it feels like Sean McGuire has been there for about 10 years. He's the Robbie Hummel of this Western Illinois team. You look at him offensively this year, he has thrown for multiple touchdowns in every single game, and including in the last three games, he's thrown for three or more touchdowns in two of three. So when you look at Sean McGuire, you mentioned it, not the most mobile of quarterbacks. So that means this NDSU defense, and specifically the big boys up front, have to be able to get home on McGuire.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. There are a couple of guys in the Valley. Next year is really going to be a fun Valley season, because you're looking at no more Easton Stick, no more Taryn Christian, no more Eli Dunn, no more Sean McGuire. There are quarterbacks all over this league that have that J.J. Redick, Robbie Hummel, Tyler Hansbrough, like, okay, when are these guys going to graduate type of feel to them? But they're veteran QBs. They've been successful in the league a long time, especially, obviously Christian and Stick. And I would even say Sean McGuire. Western has been up and down, but he really hasn't. And this is a veteran Western Illinois team. They're not awesome from a win-loss perspective. And like I said, a lot of that has to do with the defensive struggles. But it's a game where if you're not prepared, road game in a difficult environment, in a difficult travel situation, it looks to be potentially rainy. It's a night game for the first time this year. There are a bunch of little hiccups in that. What really actually sounds like excuses, but there are a bunch of little things that certainly could go wrong in this game in Macomb. But and a lot of that, like I said, has to do with just how veteran the Leathernecks are this season.
When you look at some of the weapons that McGuire is going to have to get the ball into, there's no more Jalen Acklin. I think Ross and I figured out in the pre-production meeting that he was with the Baltimore Ravens for some point in time, the receiver for the Leathernecks last year. And that means it's going to be a lot of Steve McShane. He is the running back for the Leathernecks there. He's got 274 carries, averaging about over 6 yards a carry. But Ross, he's also a major threat for them in the passing game. He leads the team in receptions by 9. So you look at the way that Western Illinois wants to use Steve McShane, it's going to be a little bit different in terms of the leading pass catcher for a team being a running back.
Yeah, McShane is, I think, easily their best offensive weapon, and a guy that I really have a ton of respect for as a football player, but a guy that without the threat of really McGuire being able to run, he's going to have to make a lot of stuff happen on his own, because it's kind of the same thing where they'll just let McGuire go the same way that they just let Dunn go. And if McGuire keeps on that any type of a read situation, he's going to get 2 or 3 yards. They're going to rally, and he's going to either get smacked or he's going to have to hook slide. And if he hook slides, maybe he'll draw a penalty in the same way that Dunn did. But Without the threat of a mobile quarterback, it is usually difficult for even the best running backs to get going against North Dakota State's defense, and especially if they can find a way to, sub to nickel and get Jabril involved in the front. Well, it'd be front six if it's nickel, but in the front, in the defensive front, and really get their best defensive player closer to the football. Not that he's not effective when he's split out, but that's, I think, where people have really succeeded running the football against NDSU this year, is when they do get spread out and it is a shotgun situation and they are able to really attack angles, wide angles in the run game. I think, you're not going to see a ton of under center stuff from WIU.
And when you look at this passing game, if it's not going to McShane, it's going to be going vertical to two guys like Tony Tate, John Bruner. They are the leading receivers in terms of receiving yards for this team. They're averaging both near around 20 yards a catch. They have 12 and 17 on the season. So that's a few different deep passes a game. So you look at this vertical passing attack that Western Illinois is going to want to try to get established. What do you think that the future holds for that NDSU defense trying to go against these two vertical threats?
Yeah, you mentioned these guys are averaging almost 20 yards a catch. Very, very impressive stuff. The corners and safeties are going to have to play well. They're going to have to play better than they played against UNI, because McGuire is going to attack them down the field. And whether he's going to go after Allison, going to go after Hendricks, it doesn't matter. They're going to try and really move the ball. And that means NDSU's got to get home with four as well. This is a big game for Greg Menard. This is a big game for Cole Karch. Big game for Derek Tuska. They're going to be heavily favored in this one. But if the defensive backs start getting their butt kicked and WIU just starts bombing the ball down the field, that's how you could see a shootout like Northern Iowa and not a butt kicking like I think is probably projected in this game.
And then when you look at this Western Illinois defense, I think you and I are still a bit perplexed as to how on the season Western Illinois has given up 31 points a game on average. But you look at the stats, they're giving up under 4 yards a carry. Their yards per attempt is under six in terms of what opponents are getting. It's a different kind of a defense in terms of statistically they look fine. I mean, they look maybe above average. But then you look at the end of the game at the scoreboard, and the score is obviously what matters most, and they're giving up over 30 points a game. So when you look at this Western Illinois defense, NDSU is going to have to take into account Pete Swenson, someone that's had 2.5 tackles for loss or more in the last three games. But it's a bit of a head-scratcher as to why Western Illinois' defense, or just Western Illinois' team overall, is giving up so many points.
Yeah, they're struggling really bad on D. They're giving up points. I think the least amount of points they've given up is 26 this season. They're very, very clearly missing a Brett Taylor. They're missing, the talented guys that they had in that front seven. It's maybe a transitional year for that defense, but this is definitely a game where I'm going to probably predict NDSU up in the 40s, because this Western defense it has given up a lot of points to some teams that I am not so sure are very good.
All right. And well, we talked a lot about Darius Shepherd early on in the show, Ross. I know that one guy that you and I are both hoping can emerge for this NDSU passing game is Christian Watson. And you had a chance to sit down with him earlier this week.
I sure did. And we'll play that interview with myself and freshman receiver Christian Watson right now.
You're with Bison freshman wide receiver Christian Watson. Christian, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. So
we're, kind of a recruiting site, so I want to kind of take you back to that process. And mm-hmm. How did the kid from Florida end up at North Dakota State?
It definitely is a long ways from home, but, I mean, it's a nationwide known program. So, I mean, obviously I grew up in high school, like, knowing about it. I think I heard about it for the first time my sophomore year after they won their second or third national title, and obviously didn't think about being recruited yet or anything like that, so I didn't think, I'd ever end up here. But I mean, over my time recruiting process, Coach Austin came down and stayed in contact with NDSU, and I mean, it was a great program. So
you're kind of in a unique situation last year in which your brother was part of like the graduate transfer or possibility, and I know North Dakota State was on his list. How difficult was it for you to he ended up going elsewhere. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it for you to kind of keep his best interest in mind, but at the same time be like, hey, you should come play with me?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, obviously, like you said, I always have his best interest in mind. So, I mean, I kind of told him, I mean, he knew about the place already, and he knew, he told me a bunch of times, oh, that place is perfect for you. And I knew, I mean, I knew it was perfect for me. I still know that. But, I mean, obviously, he has goals in life that he wants to go towards, and in the end, he just wanted to stay in Big Ten. And I understand that. I mean, I told him everything about the place, how great it is, and he understood how great it was and all that. But he just chose what was best for him in the end.
Certainly. So what would you say is the biggest difference now from your redshirt freshman year? I mean, did they have a nutrition plan for you? Were you trying to hang a bunch of weight that first year? Now it's like, all right, well, I'm on the team, and I'm traveling, and I'm part of the offense.
For me, since I'm a taller frame, they definitely want me to put on weight. Last year, obviously, you know, Kramer's a stickler about weight. So, I mean, I'm still trying to get my weight up. I definitely was trying to put on a few pounds last year. I ended up putting on about 5 pounds. I definitely still need to get a lot bigger. But, yeah, now that I'm in the mix a little bit more, it's obviously harder to put on weight, getting more reps and stuff like that. So I'm kind of – right now I'm kind of sticking at my weight right now around 195, so 193 to 195. So I'm sticking at my weight right now. But, yeah, I definitely in the offseason definitely need to
put on. Once the season's over, it's kind of time to get back on that. What's it like going to work with Easton Stick every day?
He's – a great influence. He's a great teacher. He's great motivation for all of us. I love going out there every day and just picking at his mind and getting better every day with him.
Trey's gone now, but I mean, they're still kind of a Florida contingent. Do you guys kind of bounce stuff off each other a lot? Like you and Bruce, and obviously Holden's here.
Yeah, no, it's just a great connection for us. Obviously, we're, like I said before, we're all a long ways from home. It's just good having guys who are where you're from and all that. Just being able to hang out with them outside of football and like at football practice is just a great place.
Doesn't seem like it matters who I talk to, whether it's a teammate or coaches, and everybody talks about your potential and even your practice performance. Mm-hmm. What do you think needs to happen to go from Christian Watson, kind of this prospect or this incredible talent that you are, to I am producing Saturdays in and out? Doesn't necessarily, you know, 5-6 catches, touchdown, whatever. The box score is what the box score is, but what do you have to achieve? Where do you have to go to really produce on Saturdays?
Yeah, like I said about the whole potential thing, I mean, everyone has potential. I mean, obviously, that's why we're here. But I think it's just I have to prove to everyone through practice and all that I still have a lot to get better at. And obviously, they see that I can get there, but it's just about me putting forth the work every day and just getting to the point where they think – where they believe, and I believe that I can be and to perform at that level.
How important are the seniors in your room? I mean, you have Dez there, you have Darius there, and I believe Dallas Freeman's also a senior. How important it is to kind of pick their brains and develop your position, because that room is going to get handed over to you young guys with not a ton of, you know, sophomores and juniors in that room.
It's really important. We're definitely we definitely lean on them a lot. Obviously, Shep has been here and played a lot of snaps. So, you know, we definitely lean on them a lot. So we have to definitely pick their brains a little bit more towards the end of the year, leaning towards the end of the year. Because once they're gone, I mean, it's, like you said, it's all on us. So, yeah, we have a lot to learn from them before they leave.
What have you noticed as far as the defensive backs are concerned going from non-conference play to now you've been in two Valley games?
I mean, it's definitely a high, like much higher competitiveness. Obviously, every single game means a lot to us. But, I mean, we can tell that every single game is like a Super Bowl for us. Every single game is like a national championship. Everyone's going to put forth their best effort. We're going to put forth our best effort.
Any big difference going on the road for the first time as a college athlete?
I mean, it was fun. The atmosphere, obviously, is a lot different from, like, the Fargo Dome. It's going to be different from place to place. But, I mean, I just think it's a great experience being on the road.
What have you seen on film from Western?
They play a couple different looks, actually. They play cover three, but the corners mostly play a bit of off. They play press bail. I mean, it's a little bit the same as we saw last week, so we're going to game plan for that.
All right, man. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we want to thank, of course, the North Dakota State University Athletic Department for making Christian available to us. We want to thank Christian for his time, and we really hope that you guys enjoyed that interview.
So before we head on out for today, Ross, I suppose we should get your official Bison Report prediction for this game on Saturday. I looked at the Vegas spreads before the show. NDSU is a 19.5 point favorite. I believe the over-under is somewhere around 55 for this game. So you look at, we mentioned NDSU goes on the road for the second straight week, second straight road game of the year. How do you see this game playing out? And I'm assuming you're going to pick another NDSU victory.
I am, yeah. I kind of like the over. 41-21 is my pick until I see a little bit something more from the pass defense. I think that, you know, Western could get to three scores, but if they're going to give up, you know, 34 to Illinois, if they're going to be in the high 20s against other teams, NDSU is going to try and find a way to get into the 40s. So 41-21 is my prediction for this one.
All right, so that's going to do it for things today for Ross and I. We want to thank you guys for listening as always. And if you could, please on head on over to the Bison Report. Check out Ross's Upon Film review piece. We're getting a lot more recruiting content up as more game day visits are happening. So if you also want to rate and review this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, whatever podcasting forum you found us on, that'd be greatly appreciated. So for Ross, for myself, we will be back next week to break down, hopefully, another Bison football victory. Thanks for listening. Go Bison.